Good morning. Welcome. We're going to go through 12 different points today that I hope give each of you and gives me an idea of what we can do to build joy in our marriages. When Don and I were engaged, and people would respond to us about, you know, that we were engaged, and some people were really excited, you know, and you get all kinds of different responses from people. And I found that sometimes you could tell the temperature of somebody else's marriage by how they responded. One brother said to me, it was a very powerful thing to Don and I. He said this. He said, "Ted, how many times have you been married before?" I said, "None." He says, "Don't act like you've been married before. Go in as a learner. Learn," he said, "be a student of your wife. Get a PhD in your wife." And he said this. He said, "Learn from every marriage. Some things you're going to learn what to do, and some things you're going to learn what not to do." He said, "Pay attention." And in most marriages, you'll find some of both. And I have to tell you that as I've gone through marriage, when I've seen an older couple walking out to their car or something like that, the respect that they have for one another, the love that they have for one another, and you just go, "I want that. That is really cool." When you see a wife encourage and lift up her husband and honor him, you go, "That is cool. That is really neat." When you see a wife or a husband sacrifice for his family and really show Christ to them and lead them, and you go, "That is really cool." And then you see somebody whose life is off balance, and then you see wives who overshare about negativity in public places, tear their husband down in public places. You go, "Ah, don't want that." A husband who criticizes and is critical, never satisfied. "Ah, don't want that." Somebody that's able to build or do a lot career-wise or doing great career-wise but has a vacant home life. "Ah, don't want that." So you see what happens when you think about it. All of us have areas that are strengths and weaknesses, every one of us. So we're not trying to put anybody in a box and say you're all one or the other. But I think it's really important that as we look at this today and look at this topic, what we're going to do is, this talk is based on a study of couples. And it was a study of couples, and what they did is they studied couples, they asked them about their marriages, and then they looked at the two polar opposites, the highly happy couples and then the unhappy couples. And they looked at what distinguished the highly happy couples from the unhappy couples. Now, there's plenty of people in the middle. So what we're looking at is, what do highly happy couples do? So let's learn together about some of the techniques, some of the rituals, some of the things that highly happy couples do. "Live joyfully with thy wife, whom thou lovest all thy days," says Ecclesiastes. So the first four we've labeled as be purposeful. It's pressing toward the mark. It's about being purposeful, because you know what? One of the things that you'll find is different about highly happy couples and unhappy couples is that highly happy couples are intentional about doing the things that build the happiness. Okay? It's not a roll of the dice. So the first thing is, highly happy couples tend to put God at the center of their marriage. They focus on Him, not their spouse, for fulfillment and happiness. Now, okay, we're Christian couples, and so you go, yeah, hey, everybody goes, hey, God's at the center of our marriage. Bull. A lot of you live like functional atheists. I live like a functional atheist sometimes. I worry about my day. I go to work. I go get gas. I do this. And guess who's last? God's last in my thoughts. God's last in your thoughts. We say God's at the center of our marriage. Really? Okay. Let's do that. We can do that. It's not an accident. It doesn't have to be this giant thing that we do. You don't have to sit down and read the book of Leviticus for 5 hours each night. I wouldn't recommend that. But what we say we do and what we do, let's think about that. One of the things that is very romantic, okay? And that is to say that my spouse completes me, okay? Ah, isn't that cute? See, Plato, the philosopher Plato, he came up with the idea called soulmates. And his belief was that every person was born with half of a soul, and that they wandered the whole world until they found their other half. Soulmates. Okay? Isn't that cute? I mean, Hallmark could sell some cards off of that, right? Well, let me tell you what a psychologist thinks about that. That is sick and twisted. Okay? God made you to be a whole soul. You are a whole soul. He gave your soul to you. You, as a whole soul, are to relate to your spouse, who is a whole soul. And then what you have is one whole marriage with two whole souls in it. Okay? See, what happens is, if I'm a half and I force Donna to be the other half, you know what Donna becomes? Donna becomes God to me. Because she has to be something that I force her to be. She has to be the other half of me. She has to be this completer of me. Now, yes, we complement each other. We have, and you as spouses, you do. I get that. But not in terms of your identity, not in terms of your core needs. The fact is, your spouse cannot do what God is only intended to do. He or she cannot. Only God can. And what happens is, it's like my shirt right here. I buttoned the top button, and because I got the top button of my shirt right, all the rest of the buttons go right. But what would happen if I button the top button to or top buttonhole to my third button? What would happen to all the rest of the buttons? They're all going to be off. The fact is, God's got to be your top button. If he's not, all the rest of the buttons are going to be off. And the neat part is, that this isn't a competition between God and your spouse. Because having God where he's supposed to be puts your spouse in the place he or she's supposed to be, and that is the best place that you can be. That's joy. Let's look at the next one. Highly happy couples practice meaningful touches throughout the day, boosting relational and individual health. Touches. Touch in marriage. Now, people vary on touch, okay? Some people are really touchy, okay? Some people are like, hey, give me space. I know, okay? So I'm not trying to tell you that you all have to be the same on that. But what research found is that highly happy couples had a practice of touch. And that touch, I want to be clear here, was not always sexual touch. Okay? And so I want to distinguish between sexual touch and non-sexual touch. And what this is talking about is talking about somebody coming home and giving a hug or rubbing somebody on the back or giving somebody a squeeze of the hand. It doesn't mean every single time. I mean, if you have not been touching and then very much, and then after this, every time you walk by your wife, you touch her, okay? She's going to get a can of pepper spray, okay? All right? So just don't, this is not about annoying, and this is a very important thing. This kind of touch does not have anxiety attached to it, okay? I want you to think about this. Here's what happens with touch. Because we're not doing some of this touch that's spread out, okay, and just that means I notice you, I love you. We're connected. Because that doesn't happen sometimes, except when we intend to go a little further. Okay? What starts to happen is this. He just touched me. I know what he wants. Okay? So you know what starts to happen to touch? It becomes a sign. Touch equals he wants to go to bed. Okay? And then what starts to happen is going through the day, all of a sudden, there's a touch. Oh. Now, what we don't want to do is we don't want to pigeonhole touch. Okay? it's okay to start with non-sexual touch and it go to sexual things. It's okay. It's not a problem. All right? But it's very important that we not reserve touch just for sex. It's very interesting. Research shows that when couples hug, okay, when couples just touch, I mean, just sitting next to each other, touching, feeling each other's skin, okay, hormones are and a flood of different things occur in your bodies that tell your body and your brain to bond, to connect, to love, and that you're safe. Okay? And I'm talking about non-anxious touch now. Okay? This is a neat thing. And sometimes we're so busy, I will tell you this, one of the best things you can do is to hug. You know, and you're busy and you're stressed and you're both stressed. Sometimes Donna and I have, when we give each other a hug and we just kind of have to stay there for a little bit to kind of like go, okay, yes, we're busy, we're going, we got a lot going on, and we're okay. We're okay. I love you. You love me. We're together in this. Whew. Take some time to do that. Next, highly happy couples find that when they can't resolve conflict before bedtime, they choose to sleep on it. If anger remains in the morning, they don't let it go unresolved. They deal with it. Now, for some people, this kind of a concept, they go, oh, wait a minute, Ted, that is a violation of Scripture. Because they're thinking of a verse in Ephesians 4, okay? Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. You need to give place to the devil. Now, a couple things about that. Number one, if you're in Alaska in a certain part of the year and the sun didn't go down, does that mean that you can just be angry all the time? I don't know. You know, that teaching is not actually about the position of the sun. Sometimes people are like, but we got to go. We got to get this resolved before bedtime, before midnight, you know. And it's like, well, the sun went down at 6. Does it still count? I don't know. Okay. All right, let me ask you a question. Have you ever had an argument, conversation, tried to sort something out when both of you were seriously tired? And it was seriously late, and you were seriously not on the same page. And you felt like you were in the twilight zone. And things just didn't feel all that rational. And husbands are looking at their wives going, who is she? And wives are looking at their husbands, why doesn't he understand me? Okay? This has probably never happened in your home. I want you to think about this. The teaching here is this. We're not trying to teach don't resolve. Obviously, resolve things as quick as you can resolve things. That's smart. That's only smart. It's spiritual. Let's deal with things. But here's the other part. That when you are unable to be rational, when your emotions are engaged at the highest levels, how much perspective do you have? Okay? When are you most likely to say something you regret? See, if green zone is calm and yellow zone is tense and the red zone is high tension and anxiety, guess what happens? Guess which one of those zones you're most likely to say something or do something that you regret later? Red zone. Okay? Guess which one you can't hear your spouse's perspective in? Red zone. Guess what arguments are like at 1 o'clock in the morning? So what this teaching is just, it's about finding a wise time to communicate. It's not about don't figure it out. It's not delay just to delay. It's think about, this is important. When is a good time for you guys to deal with it? All right. Highly happy couples, this is number 4. Highly happy couples generously focus on what their mate is giving to them. The spouse, in turn, deliberately tries to give back. So here's the question. Should you keep score in marriage? Should you keep score? All right? Now, this is kind of an interesting thing because scorekeeping can get real dangerous real quick. And I'm going to tell you that if you are keeping track of what you've done for your spouse, okay, and what they haven't done for you, I'm going to call that keeping a record of wrongs. And I don't think that that's wise. It's natural, but it's not wise. But here's what this research showed, is that people in highly happy couples did keep score. And what they kept score of was how their spouse blessed them. That's what they kept score of. Oh, you know what? My wife did this for me. Oh, you know what? My husband showed me kindness in this. They kept score in their head of how they were blessed by their spouse, the opportunities, the things, the times of kindness. Think about that. And so the Bible's clear. We got to work on getting rid of that record of wrongs. We are scorecard collectors for wrongs. But what highly happy couples do is they flush the wrongs, and they keep track, and they even rehearse the blessings. Let's go with gratitude. The next one, about being present. Another one about gratefulness here. You'll see gratefulness actually shows up several times here. Highly happy couples choose gratefulness for how their spouse realistically meets their needs instead of longing for something which is difficult or impossible for their spouse to meet. First of all, how do you feel if you're around someone for whom you can never please? Somebody always raises the bar. Never quite good enough. We talked about this in the breakout session last night about sexuality and Christian marriage. The reality is feeling like you can't measure up to somebody. Somebody is constantly, you need to do better. That's a break. That's not an accelerator or something that grows sexual openness or emotional openness. That puts on the brakes. It closes us down. Now, each of you have strengths and weaknesses in your marriage by your personalities, your gifts, your abilities, all those different things and the roles you play. But also, each of you do not have all the things that somebody else has. See, there's always somebody that's going to be smarter, prettier, brighter, wealthier, wittier, understands the Bible more. There's all these things. There's somebody that is more, all those things. And that's the beauty of commitment in Christ, is it's not a comparison game. There's no question. I'm setting myself up here, okay? I was going to say, there's no question that Donna could have got a better husband. So please just don't nod. Okay? She could have got somebody that was smarter, wealthier, all those things than me. But it's a commitment. It's gone. And you know what has to happen? We have to understand that our spouses have the personalities that they do. They have the skills that they do. All right? I would love it, you know, if Donna really enjoyed reading the kind of literature that I do, okay? And she doesn't. And I can't figure it out why. It's wonderful stuff. I'm sure you would agree. I would love to have thorough discussions about it. And you know what? Not what happens in our marriage. I end up hearing about some lady that was a Christian and she went west and she was going to be a teacher, you know, the books that you're, you know, and she was going to be a teacher and she met this guy out here. He wasn't a Christian. They didn't like each other. But eventually he became a Christian, they got married, and then they found oil under their land, believe it or not. I don't know about you, but I think that's kind of a repetitive theme in some of these books. Okay? Believe me, I've never read a book that had that kind of a story in it. Okay? But the whole thing about it is this, that by letting them be who they are and being grateful for who they are, the fact is, Donna loves me. She is committed to me. She has supported me. But you know what? Donna is not impressed by me. She's not impressed that I'm here speaking today. She's not impressed that I'm a psychologist. She is impressed, by the way, when I'm a good husband. She is impressed when I get home on time. She is impressed when I'm a good dad. But you know what? She is not impressed when I go to a conference to speak and I publish something or I do this or that. That doesn't impress her. Now, there's a part of me that wants her to go, Ted, I am so lucky because I got you. But you know what? Donna gives me something better. She keeps my feet right on the ground. So let me ask you, should I be unhappy that Donna is not stroking my ego the way I want my ego to be stroked? Or should I be eternally grateful that Donna keeps my feet on the ground where God wants me? Think about that. Let's go on. Next one. Highly happy couples aren't just spending time together because they're happy. A big part of the reason they're so happy is that they're spending time together. Now, when you read this one, it kind of is like, well, wait a minute, where's the chicken and the egg? And that's the whole point. Okay? So it's kind of like this. It's kind of like unhappy couples are like going, okay, we don't like to spend time together. You know, he's very annoying. Okay? Oh, she's exhausting. You know? Well, then it's kind of like, oh, we have to spend time together. Ooh. Okay? So here's the deal. What highly happy couples do is create a reciprocal process. And what that means is that as they spend time together, they're building pictures of each other's hearts. It's called building a love map. It's called being able to know how their world works. It's to be able to know what their fears are. It's to be able to know what their dreams are, who their friends are, what's going on with them. It's having a map of the internal terrain of their lives. It's being able to know and to do the things. And again, this is not about some big thing that happens once a year. It's in the little things. Okay? It's interesting because one of the research studies shows that couples who are able to hang out together, okay, whatever that means to them, okay, to go on a walk together, to spend time doing a puzzle or doing this project or that, the couples who enjoy hanging out together are 5 times happier than those that don't. Okay? And it's about being able to know your world and then being able to share. Let's go on. Highly happy couples treat one another with intentional kindness. They joke and they challenge, but they try to never do it in ways that their mate would perceive as disrespectful or hurtful. This is a key. And this is about having, at the end of the day, a no-losers policy. A no-losers policy. Okay? It is about having a bedrock commitment that says this: I don't want to win if it causes you to lose. Okay? I don't want to win if it causes you to lose. And what that means is this: that we can joke, we can have fun, we can go to potluck and tell a story about when such and such happened and when this happened, we can all laugh. But I would never share that story that tears you down in front of somebody in which you felt inferior. Okay? And I think one of the things is, it is about having the safety to know that your spouse has your back. Okay? It is about knowing that you are not going to be exposed or hung out to dry. Okay? And so what this is, we can joke, we can have fun, we can challenge, and we can, you know, all those different things. But at the bedrock, if we know, I don't want to win if it causes you to lose. My goal is for you to win. Okay? That kind of an underlying commitment creates a sense of safety and bondedness that is so precious. And I want you to think about it. The things that cause disruption in relationships, trust is one of those things. If I'm not sure that I can trust what you're going to say about me, that's pretty hard for me to want to open up with something, isn't it? See how that goes? Lastly, highly happy couples fully invest emotionally in their marriage by risking vulnerability. This leads to a dramatically increased security and happiness in the relationship. Here's one of the interesting things about vulnerability. Vulnerability has an equation. You could do this, that when I feel like I have something that I feel uncertain about, or you, for you too, we have something that we feel uncertain about, whether it's something about our hearts, whether it's a temptation, whether it's a whatever it would be, you know, a fear, okay, or a failure, okay. When we think about sharing that, we feel, oftentimes we feel shame, we feel embarrassment, we feel the what are somebody else going to think. Now in marriage, what happens is couples learn, and this happens in lots of different areas of relationship, but I'm just talking about couples now. We can talk about the weather, we can talk about what's going on, and you know what happens? Lots and lots of times, couples' relationships revolve around logistical communication. Logistical communication is about who's going where, at what time, picking up what, and get a gallon of milk on the way. Okay? It is about the transactions of life. Now, that's not bad. It's not bad that we have logistical communication. But logistical communication does not connect hearts. It connects schedules. Now, granted, you're raising kids, you're coming and going and you're busy with work, and you got to connect on the schedules, okay, or else you'll feel crazy, all right? But in order to connect hearts, we have to do something that says, I'm going to risk opening my heart to you. And here's the beauty of this equation. When we open our hearts to somebody and they extend grace, and I love this scripture. It says, receive you one another as God has received you, or Christ has received you. Just receive one another. How did Christ take you? As a mess and as you were. Okay? So when we are vulnerable and we share that with somebody who extends grace, you know what happens to the relationship? It goes deeper. That's the formula. I share vulnerability to somebody who extends grace, and I go deeper. Here's what happens. I extend vulnerability. I get a smart comment or a knockback or criticism, okay, or uncaring. I clam up. See what happens? And so when your spouse hurts, when your spouse is trying to share something, think about it this way. The world needs to stop. And you need to listen. Okay? The world needs to stop. And you need to listen. That's what. And again, I'm not saying that's convenient. I'm not saying. But I am saying the fact is when your spouse shares his or her heart, your attention needs to be on it. Your ears need to be open. And you need to be a receiver. And happy couples, what happens is that when they can do that, when my heart is safe with you and your heart is safe with me, oh, wow. Now we're really talking. Now we're on to be positive, thinking about the good things here. When highly happy couples experience hurt, they extend grace and assume their mate's intentions were pure and have a reasonable explanation. Here's an interesting thing about that. So do highly happy couples not have conflict? That's the question. The answer is highly happy couples have conflict. What highly happy couples do is handle conflict differently than unhappy couples. Now, it's true that unhappy couples have a lot more conflict too. But highly happy couples are not conflict-free, but they handle it differently. And one of the things that they do, remember that no losers policy? They assume that the no losers policy is operating. It's called having a positive sentiment about the marriage. It's about thinking positively. The reality is, when you see somebody and your view of them is negative, okay, you're going to see negative. You've probably heard of this psychology experiment. It's a pretty famous one. But what they did was they took two classes of, I forget, it was kindergartners or first graders or something like that. They randomly distributed them. They were perfectly randomly distributed. There was no differences in the classes. They told one of the teachers that so they had two classes. Teacher A was told, these children have been identified to be excellent. Even if they don't appear right now, we believe that they're going to turn out to be something special. This teacher over here was told, this is going to be a challenging class. You're likely to have a lot of head strain. It's going to be tough. We're not real sure. You're going to have to really work hard with them because it's going to be tough class. You know, this is okay. They were told that one time at the beginning of the semester, or the beginning of the year, whatever it was. That was the only difference between those two classes. And you know what it did? It changed the entire semester about how they saw the kids, about how the parent or the teacher's perceptions of them, how they reported on those kids to their parents, what they saw in the kids, their ability to grow. Because guess what this person saw over here? A bunch of problems waiting to happen. And guess what happens for you and I when we're catching our spouse? We go, oh yeah, figures. Figures that's what she would do. It's kind of like, you know, a wife who comes out into the kitchen and her husband has left a jar of peanut butter sitting on the counter. And she goes, oh my word, he did this just to make me mad. Well, first of all, I have to disagree with you. He is not nearly that bright, okay? And he did not think near far enough to do that. He just didn't put it away. Okay? Yeah, you're giving him way too much credit if you think that he did it just to get you. But that's what happens, right? Ooh, she did that to get me. Ooh! Even when there's hurt, the belief is, we're going to bring this around. It hurts now. We're disconnected now, but we're going to bring this around. Okay? I know this is hard. Highly happy couples look at that disconnect as a temporary upset that will be resolved or that comes back around. Okay? Unhappy couples look at it through the lens of character flaws. She is flawed. She just wants to hurt me. We're disconnected. It's us versus them. Next one. Highly happy couples quickly stop a negative train of thought or action by replacing unhappy or angry thoughts or actions with positive ones to combat negativity. In this, I want to talk about something called rumination. Rumination is when we replay something over and over in our thoughts. Okay? And it's playing over the negative. So think about it this way. When something's happened and you've been angry, and then afterwards you're replaying that scene in your head and you're having a conversation with that person about what you would like to say, okay, that's rumination. Okay? Now here's the interesting thing about rumination is it's very compelling. When we're ruminating, it feels like the solution is to keep on ruminating. It feels like it's the solution to figure it out, to analyze it, to play it over and to play it over. The problem is, rumination breeds rumination. Playing over hurt builds hurt. It brings more hurt. Rehearsing hurts brings more hurts. Now, I'm not saying that there's not a time to talk about hurts. I'm not saying there's not a time to go back and deal with something. Rumination, however, okay, if you are playing over that hurt, and that's what you've been priming your thoughts on about your wife or about your husband, guess what happens the next time you see him? When you see that peanut butter jar, of course he's a jerk. Okay? All right? So highly happy couples go, wait a minute, you know what? It's my responsibility to deal with my rumination, okay? What he did was not okay, but it's my responsibility to deal with my thoughts. Got to keep going here. When highly happy couples inevitably experience hurt feelings and conflict, they eventually reconnect by mutually sharing a private signal that says, we're okay. This is called closing the loop. If you think about it, when a couple has a disconnect, they have that whatever that kind of jars them and they're not on the same page, and they both feel that, all right? What unhappy couples do is they either leave it open, we're never going to address it, okay? Or they kind of assume, we're just going to kind of assume that it is closed. I remember once that Donna and I had some kind of, I don't remember the argument, I just remember what happened after, because we had some kind of argument. I went downstairs and did something, and when I came back up, I was thinking about something completely different. Like I had switched tracks, I was on to, you know, whatever. And I came up and I treated Donna like that argument never happened. Okay? Like I put it in some compartment, left it in the basement, came upstairs, and I was ready to go on. Okay? I found out that Donna wasn't. And so here's what this is about. This is about being able to make sure that you've come around to reconnect. Okay? And so some couples, this is going to be a verbal exchange. Sometimes it's a squeeze. It can be different things, but it's something that when the tension has come down, it's just a little bit of little thing that says, we're back in sync. We're back in sync. Now, sometimes there are things that aren't fixed that's going to take a while to fix, okay? But even when that's true, you can say, we're together as we work on this. We're together as we work on this. We agree that we've got something we got to work out in parenting. We're not on the same page. Or we got to work out this thing, whatever. But we're together as we work on this. Yeah, we don't have it figured out together, but we're going to work on it as we work with this. It's that connection. Last thing, highly happy couples give their spouse most of the credit for their relationship success, and they live in regular, conscious gratitude as a result. So, what this is, you'll notice, you see how many times, you can go back and look at it, how many times the word gratitude came through on all these? The fact is, as human beings, we tend to see what we tend to see. And if you're looking for negativity, you can find it. If you're looking for blessings, you can find it. You're looking for thankfulness, you can find it. You're looking for a way that your wife is going to screw up, she's going to do it. You're looking for, you know, when your husband does something like that, you're going to see it. So what it is looking and saying, hey, you know what? I got something that I don't deserve. And I want you to think about this statement and listen to it in two different ways. Wow, what did I do to deserve this? And think of this. What did I do to deserve this? All right? In all of the happy couples that I have ever talked to, I have never heard the attitude of, what did I do to deserve this? In happy couples, you don't see this, I got the raw deal. In unhappy couples, I have never seen, what did I do to deserve this? Seen it in happy couples. Now, it doesn't mean your spouse is perfect. Doesn't mean you're perfect. We've let that aside. But let's see the gift that God's given. And I just want to say in closing here, Donna and I, we just celebrated our 25th anniversary September 12th. And when we said for richer or poorer and sickness and health and all those different things, just like you did, we didn't know what we were going to hit, just like you didn't know what you were going to hit. Donna didn't know that it was going to include heart surgery and a stroke for me this year. We didn't know it was going to include twins, the ministry, all different kinds of things. But one of the things that I just want to say, that Christ has been the center of our marriage. And the second thing is, I know that I don't deserve her. And I hope and pray that God blesses you today and as you go forward in your marriage. Thank you very much.